We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Subscribers to NewOrleans.football get all of our news and analysis every single day. Use the code NOF to save 20% on your first payment. You get an extra members only podcast every week, the walkthrough video. And we got a story up there right now taking you through the process that DeMario Davis and Tyrann Mathieu go through daily to stay healthy and effective. Behind the scenes coverage that you just aren't going to find anywhere else, especially this time of year. All right. Welcome back to another episode of NewOrleans.football presented by PJ's Coffee. We're coming to you from our new studio on Veterans Memorial Boulevard, right next door to my guy, Matt Bowers, Ford dealership, beautiful new showroom there. Make sure you go check it out if you're in the market for a new car. And if you don't want a Ford, they got Chevys, Dodges, everything else that you could imagine. Just look for their dealerships. They're all over the region. Great show for you guys today. We're going to break down the Chase Young contract, tell you what it means, where things stand, where the team goes in free agency from here, and a whole lot more. Stick with us right after this word from our great sponsors. The NewOrleans.football show is proudly presented by PJ's Coffee. PJ's Coffee has some of the best drinks that you can find. They have locations all over the city. They have pastries and everything else you need to get your day started. So go check them out. Are you looking for the perfect engagement ring? Look no further than Friend & Company Fine Jewelers' new engagement salon. This new area houses a wide selection of engagement rings to choose from in all cuts, sizes, and colors. Their experienced staff offer five-star customer care to help you find the perfect ring to express your love. Visit their new engagement salon today. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the perfect ring for the perfect moment and also for the perfect person. 7713 Maple Street between Adams and Burdett Street. 504-866-5433. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers. Check them out at friendandcompany.com. Hard Hat Punch Tool Strawberry Whiskey is an 86 proof blend of aged wheat bourbon, American light whiskey, and fresh Punch Tool strawberries. Blended in New Orleans, it is not for the thin skinned. Look for it in your favorite stores, bars, and restaurants. New Orleans Stop Football is proud to be sponsored by Firehouse Subs. Make sure you check out their location on Veterans Boulevard. All right, let's get into the show. Let's get into our lead topic presented by Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, official jewelers of the New Orleans Saints. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers has a beautiful new engagement salon. They got all kinds of rings at all kinds of different price points. If you're going to ask someone special to spend the rest of their life with you, make sure you go there. Talk to Ken. He'll get you fixed up with the right ring and get you something in your price range. And while you're there, check out their Florida Lee earrings that are priced at $1,100 and the necklace that is priced at $1,350. Tell them that NOF sent you. All right. Lead topic, does Chase Young's deal still feel right for the Saints? Since our last show, some of the details have come out on it. It is a one-year, $13 million deal that is fully guaranteed. He gets $7.9 million in per-game roster bonuses. If he shows up for 17 games, he gets every single one of those dollars, $450,000 per game. But it's a bit of a win-win situation for the Saints because let's say he starts the season on PUP and he misses 10 games. He doesn't get $4.5 million of that $7.9 million, but it is fully guaranteed because if they were to cut him, they have to pay out every single dollar of it. But if he doesn't play all the games, he doesn't get all the money. So there are protections there in place. If he misses the whole season, he doesn't get any of that $7.9 million. So it's a safe deal for the Saints in the sense that there are some protections given that he is having this neck surgery, and the neck surgery is a bit of a risk. Now he's expected to be back by the start of the season, so the hope here is that none of this ever comes into play. And, you know, I think this is a win-win for both sides. We got the details up on the screen right now. Base salary of $2.7 million, signing bonus of $1.86 million, workout bonus of $450,000, per-game roster bonuses up to $7.99 million, add it all up, $13 million, cap charge of just under $3.5 million, four void years on this deal to get make the math work. So that's kind of how all the accounting works. You know, overall, I like this deal for Chase. I like this deal for the Saints. Like, he's in the fifth year of his contract right now. He gets $13 million if he plays all 17 games. He would have got just shy of $17 million if his fifth-year option got picked up. So if he plays, he comes out of this pretty much whole, and he hits the market, and he can go out and get paid. I think it's a good setup for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, the question, though, the topic is, does the deal still feel right for the Saints? Because since our last show, we actually, the news broke while we were on the show. We talked about all the things we like about him and his potential. The neck surgery is something new that we haven't talked about. And to me, yeah, this is exactly what a Chase Young contract should look like. He's an incredibly special player. When the 49ers traded for him last year, I thought, man, must be nice to be the Kings. You know, they're going to the Super Bowl and they get to take a chance on Chase Young. The only question to me is if the Saints are in a position to be that team that's taking any kind of a risk reward chance on anybody. This is the headliner of their free agency class. I'm still super excited. You did a film study on the site. Everybody needs to check out. I mean, when this guy is right, he is one of the most special players in the league. And you could even say that if you want to be super positive, and I hate to come across as super, like, maybe this surgery is what gets him right. Maybe this surgery, maybe in year five, he's going to look like he did back in year one again, because this surgery gets him right. And so I love the upside. And yeah, I mean, I'm glad that there's some protection if they don't see the other side, but both sides want him to make all 13 million.
Absolutely.
They want to see him play all 17 games. And I'm really excited about what they could look like. It's just, yeah, I mean, you wish the Saints could get a sure thing, but sure, you know, sure things aren't that available in this range.
See, my argument would be is I think they're exactly the team that should take a risk at this position. So let's say he never plays a game and they spend $4 million and he doesn't see the field once. I don't care. Like, I don't care that the $4 million is gone, because if you spend that $4 million on another pass rusher, you're getting like two sacks. Like, they don't need, you know, what they did at DT last year. Like, you don't need the equivalent of Nathan Shepard at defensive end. Like, I think you should be trying to get a player that swings things for you, because they need someone to swing things. And if Chase Young doesn't swing things for him, they probably have issues that they don't overcome and they probably don't make the playoffs. Now, again, I said on the last one, I don't know if he changes my win prediction, but like, theoretically, he's a player that could play 17 games and have 12 sacks. And that would change my win prediction if you tell me it hits that positively. And I think it does swing things. And I think they do have to take a big risk to try to get outside of this if they don't want to spend money. They don't want to add five different people to add depth to their defense. If you just have the money to make one move, kind of, try to get a difference maker, and you can't shop at the top of the market.
You can't get a player with his talent anywhere near
this
price.
And if you want to spend just $10 million, you're getting like Van Ginkle, who doesn't fit their profile, who's probably going to have like, I don't know what he's going to do, but like in this system, you probably have five, six sacks. Like, that's probably the type of player he is. And if you're going all the way down to $4 million, like, you're getting a guy that's probably not even going to play ahead of like anybody. Like, I think he's probably your worst pass rusher on the team at that point. So I like it, but I'm a risk taking person, but I don't think you can get ahead in life in any capacity if you're just playing it straight down the middle. You never take a risk. You're not going to find financial success. You're not going to find happy. Like, at some point you have to take a risk to get ahead, and they're in a position where you're doing it. And like, signing like Danielle Hunter is a risk in itself. Like, that's a huge risk, but that doesn't make sense for the team. I think getting with a guy that's 25, 26 years old, you get him in your building. If it hits, you got first shot at keeping him. I think this is exactly the type of move they should make, especially for where they're at right now.
Now, I mean, it was super exciting they signed him. Oh, wow, super deflating that he has neck surgery. Okay, I like the way this contract is structured. It makes sense for both sides. You know, it can't completely go bust. Like, if he has the Marcus Davenport season, which we don't think we have, we think he's a more special player, and we don't think the health risk is the same. But once you add all those things together, is this still like, like a home run free agency signing?
No,
what do you call
no,
it?
I mean, I think it changes the outlook of the signing itself. Like it is what it is. It's a chance that could go either way. Yeah. And there's a lot of outcomes from it. I mean, I think this type of neck injury is something that's pretty common in football players. Like, I think there's a lot of people that have had the same thing he's had, and it hasn't been a huge issue, but he's getting surgery and the timeline is putting him into training
camp.
We
want to see him in OTAs. Yeah, you hear that all the time, I wish he had a whole full off season. Like, at the time when somebody comes back in training camp, they feel really optimistic. And then if things don't go well, they say, well, I'm really excited now because I'll have OTAs in mini camp. So like, we shouldn't gloss over that he's going to miss OTAs.
Yeah,
in mini
put you
camp.
Behind. So, I mean, obviously that's not ideal. It's not what you want, but look, I've seen this team burn $4 million on worse things. And this is, if you spend $4 million here and it doesn't work, I don't think it sets you back in any material way. It's not like, damn, they couldn't go get the guy they wanted because they spent that $4 million on Chase Young and it didn't work out. Like, I don't think that's the case. And even if you end up spending the whole 13 and it's kind of like a downward type of season, like, that's kind of like, I think if he's on the field and he plays, like, I think you're probably getting 6-7 sacks no matter what. And that's a going rate for that. So I think no matter what, like, I think still your floor on this is probably fine. Like, I don't think it's going to be a huge thing. I don't think it's a huge deficit. And, you know, even before we knew how this thing was structured to where, like, you know, yeah, it's fully guaranteed. But if he doesn't play in some of the games, they get some money back. To me, like, at $13 million, it still felt like, you know what? That's a risk that I was okay with him taking. Like, because that's not that much money in NFL dollars. Like, $13 million isn't really a hindrance. Like, we see them move and hide. And
it was Marcus Davenport's contract last year, 1 year up to $13 million.
Yeah. It was like, yeah, that's a loss, but it's not like, I don't think it's a franchise changing type of loss. I think where you have franchise changing type of losses is like the Jairus Byrd type deals. Like, this isn't that. It's a 1 year commitment. And, you know, no matter what, like, if he was healthy coming in, it's $13 million. It's just like, my look on it is still like, either it works and it's great and you got first chance to sign him, or you walk away and it's over and no big deal. But, you know, I think that it's fine. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just, it feels like a very worthwhile type of risk to me, and where they're at, and this is where they exist, and it was where they existed in the draft before. Like, this is a position where you can't really go out and just make something happen without making a massive financial risk. And this year, that was with guys that are really old, like nearing the end of their prime productivity.
Well, it's funny. Here's
and that's
who
not
I'll,
where the Saints exist right now.
Here's how I'll compare him to age-wise. Exact 4 years into his deal was Jonathan Greenard from the Texans, who I'd kind of put on as my favorite, and I didn't know. That guy had one like really good breakout year. He also dealt with some injuries earlier in his career. Thought, you know, if the Saints could get him for $12 million a year, I kind of like that idea because he can help now, but he can also be part of the future. Well, yeah, a lot of teams like the idea of getting a 26-year-old who is a sure thing health-wise or whatever. Even though you said, I don't know how much I would pay a guy who only had one good breakout year. He got like $19 million a year on a 5-year deal. So like, this is, you know, if you're shopping on a budget, this is super exciting. You're so right. Anybody else making a deal like this is not nearly as exciting as Chase Young. So we are not going to oversell it as a sure thing. It's a risk-reward proposition that they took. And look, for a team right now that's not doing a lot of things that are really fun and exciting for the fans, this is exciting. This is it could go either way, but, you know, the upside is high. And for that, we'll lead right into you did the film study on him. And, you know, I'm curious. So much of the narrative around him has been, gosh, when he looks good, he looks incredible. And then sometimes he doesn't look that good. And I, you know, you got to wonder if this neck issue that he was dealing with as early as the preseason had something to do with that. But he still managed to have five sacks in the first 7 games, even after doing that. You said in that film study he was still 17th in the league in pressures last year. What was your takeaway about the player they might be getting if he gets back healthy?
Yeah, I mean, look, a guy with a neck injury probably isn't fully engaging in some ways, too. Like, you know, when he's going up on someone, he's probably, you know, protecting himself a little bit just inherently. Like, if you have pain, like, you're going to do that. So I think clearing this up could help him a little bit. It's just the timeline of the surgery is the only thing that I think makes it a concern. Like, because, again, I think this neck injury is something that's kind of common across the NFL. And if you know about it, you can handle it and you take care of it. Like, it can happen and nobody knows. Like, I think that kind of happens sometimes. So that's where it's an issue. But on film, look, I mean, when he's when he's on, like, he has snaps where he looks, man, he was the number two pick. Like, and you see it. Like, you see
and
it.
And the NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. He's not a never was.
When he's winning, you see it, and it's there, and it's like, man, this is, like, unbelievable. This dude has immense talent. And then, you know, there's plays where, you know, sometimes there's little stretches where it's like, I'd like to see a little bit more. Like, I'd like to see a little bit more activity. And I'm saying that about a guy that was 17th in the league in pressures last year. Like, and it felt like there was meat on the bone. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the possibility is getting them out of Washington, getting them in a better system, getting them in a better culture, having them around Cam Jordan, who, you know, is going to lead. And if you're willing to take that, maybe he leads you to, you know, some better culture stuff. And that leads to more production on the field. But, you know, I think it is something where he needs to come in and be motivated, start to finish, you know, have a motor that just kind of goes nonstop and find a way to keep it going. And he should be. Like, we talked to him after our last show, and he was like, I don't have anything to prove. Like, I don't buy into that. Yeah, you do, man. And, like, he knows it, too. Like, he knows it, too. I think he probably just doesn't want to feed into the public narrative of that. But he knows. When he's sitting at home, he knows that he didn't get his fifth-year option picked up. He knows he's on a one-year deal. He knows that, you know, getting that $20, $25, $30 million that his talent should earn him depends on what he does this year. And, you know, I think that plays into the rehab thing too. Like, he's gonna probably attack that rehab with, or where he should attack that rehab, which is extreme vigor. Like, it's there should be no comfort here. And I think there's no way that he feels comfortable with any of it. Like, he should be on a mission from start to finish. And if he is and he's healthy and that translates on the field, I like where you're getting. But again, if you go bust, you're kind of in an okay place to walk away from that and not have a lot of damage. But again, I'm somebody evaluating this as, like, I've bet my life on multiple things. Like, so, like, I'm someone that's, it's just like, you know, to me, that's what you got to do to try to you want to get a depreciated asset and try to get upside on it. So that's just kind of my inherent view of the world. But if you're a risk averse individual, you're probably looking at this and you're like, this is crazy. Like, so I understand both sides of it. It's just, you know, I'm okay with losing a little to try to gain a lot. So, and when I watch him, I see that upside. And it's, but again, you're looking at it when you're watching that in these situations, anytime they draft someone, they sign someone, you're just kind of looking at what they can do. And you're like, well, if this gets extrapolated, it's always easy to look at it in an optimistic way. And then it's like, yeah, but there are these downsides. And if they, but so you kind of mention the downsides, but you don't fixate on them. And, you know, there are things, but I think that floor, again, if he's healthy, it's hard to see a scenario where, like, he doesn't walk his way into 5, 6, 7 sacks. Like, he's just that kind of player if the neck is good.
Well, one of the things you mentioned in that answer, too, is in addition to just seeing the talent and the upside and can we get better coaching at him, we know from talking to sources about, you know, the Saints thinking what attracted them, that part that you mentioned about, you know, maybe it's a fallacy in free agency that you think Washington couldn't get the best out of him, but we can give him the right support system, have the right structure, have the right culture around him. But that's how teams kind of have to look at things, especially in free agency, is, was Washington getting the best out of him? Wasn't a great culture. Wasn't getting the best out of a lot of players. Just saw Montez Sweat. The Bears took a chance on him. They're thrilled with the chance they took on Montez Sweat. And the Saints believe, you know, he wasn't being put in the best position to succeed in Washington, and we're going to try to put him in the best position.
Well, just a quick interjection. Like, I thought he played better in Washington the first half of the year than he did in San Francisco. But I mean, that's kind of switching systems too. And it's just probably trying to pick things up, not being comfortable. But, you know, one of the things, like, people were saying on Twitter is like, well, if, like, Ron Rivera couldn't get this out of him, like, I think he did. Like, I think he had a nice bounce back. He had 5 sacks there. He played fewer games in Washington and had 10 more pressures, I think, in Washington than he did in San Francisco. So I think that he was playing good last year. Overall, I think he was like on the track, and then you get traded midseason, you're going somewhere else, you're trying to fit in, all that stuff. You got this injury. Like, so I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff you can look at and kind of talk your way around. But like, at the end of it, like, he's got to get healthy. He's got to be on the field. He's got to play. But for me, like, this is even more reason to double dip. Like, I think there's all the reason in the world still, if the right guy is there at 14, I think you do it quickly. And I think you just keep stacking assets at this position if the opportunities present themselves and they look good, because there are no sure things. The only sure thing you have is Carl Granderson. Everything else is a massive question. Chase Young's a question. Cam's a question. Bosky's a question. Turner's a question. I would keep trying to add to the position if the opportunity's there. And if you got to carry 6 or whatever, like, who cares? Carry 6. You can cut somebody else at a different position. Like,
that's that's the next question that I had on there. Just so now that even we talked about this a little on Monday, but now that we know that he's a little bit more of a health question mark, hopefully playing all 17 games, is defensive end back to a must in round one or two of the draft?
I don't know if must, but like it's a strong want still. Yeah. Still a strong want, because you can roll out there with what you got and hope for the best. But yeah, like it's, for me, it's like it is at the top of like that want list. Like if you're drawing the line, like there's no gap. Like it's touching the line between must and want.
Not, you don't, this doesn't make you go out and plug the gap with like a veteran that's not going to make quite as much money, like a Jadeveon Clowney or a Bud Dupree, though. Does that take those kind of guys off the list? You don't just need a body, or even those guys are still on the list for you.
Where I'm at with this team and kind of what they're doing kind of speaks to what it is. So like I'm speaking at this from what I think they're trying to do. Like I think they're trying to find, I think everyone they've signed has been a cost effective player with some risk, varying degrees, but significant upside on every single one. And I think that's kind of how they're playing it, and they're doing it, and they're trying to clean up their cap, and they're trying to not make big commitments to anything. But it's like, we're going to make these moves. They're all going to be cost effective. And if they all hit, like we end up in a great spot. If they don't, this is what our season is. And I think that's what they're trying to do. So I think going off that and like getting a Clowney kind of runs counter to everything we've seen.
I don't want to see that. I really don't. I'm way more excited about a move like this than I would be about a move like that.
I like it because it serves both things. Yeah. Like, it's minimal commitment. If it's a good commitment, you pay the, you know, he's healthy, you got a better chance of making the playoffs, and fine. And then still, if he was healthy, like if there was no neck thing and it was $13 million, you're fine with it. Like that's what I was trying to like, and I don't know if I explained that the best way before, but like you're fine with it at that point. Like it's $13 million. That feels low for someone with his upside. You do it, you go for it. And it's like, okay. And that still fits in with that trend. Now you do it and you got the injury you know, the per game roster, all that stuff. Like the downside on that isn't that far for me. So I'm okay with it overall. So all those things fit to me. So no, I'm not chasing anything in free agency. Like all my signings, if I'm the Saints, like I would make them fit this profile to where there's not a huge investment. It's a 1-year deal. If it works, great. Maybe we try to keep them next year. If it doesn't, we walk away. But at the end of the day, like none of this stuff is straining my financials.
My answer to that question about the draft is I'm not going to call it a must. I don't love what they have at defensive end, but I've got six lottery tickets, you know, not even lottery tickets, but I've got six swings at the plate. Like maybe Peyton Turner hits, maybe Foskey hits, maybe Chase Young hits. Like I've, you know, Tano Passanio is still a guy who belongs on an NFL roster. Like I don't just need a body. I don't need like a third round pick who we don't even have graded higher than Isaiah Foskey, you know, like I don't need that. But if Dallas Turner's the guy in round one, and even if they moved up to get him, well, defensive end is still probably the second most important position in football. And Granderson is the only guy I know I have on my roster next year. So long term, of course, it's still one of my top needs.
The only thing I hate about this Chase thing is like I just wish all the information would have hit at the same exact time. So it could have been evaluated a certain way, because like it was like they sign him and you're kind of like, all right, like that's handled. Like it's good. It's, and like you process it through that. And then it's like 12 hours later, it's like, wait a minute. Like what the hell's going on? Like the surgery, like that was my issue with it. Like, because, man, it stinks that, like, they signed him and it's still, like, a maybe and an if. And falls. And, look, I think he's closer. And I don't – again, we'll see how it all plays out. But, like, I think he's closer to being more of a sure thing than, like, Peyton Turner or anybody else. But, like, damn, it sucks that like they signed this guy.
But I will
still
say, and this is an important thing to say, I feel like all the information coming out in the media the way it is in pieces – so many people are immediately convinced, oh, the Saints got snookered, or they're like, oh no, the Saints got the better end. Like everybody involved in the deal went into it with eyes wide open. And you know, the Saints didn't like get tricked into doing this. They didn't settle for this. Like, oh shoot, we thought he was healthy. And then, well, what's the best we can get for him? Like they went into this knowing about the injury and they worked out this deal that both sides are really happy with. So nobody got took. The risk that we're talking about now is something that both sides
are assuming,
feel good about, and are going into with eyes wide open.
Yeah, it's just, I just wish we would have known. But that's the thing. Like, the Saints don't play in the media. Like, that's just kind of what it is. Like, they just sit back and let people say whatever, and then it kind of just, you know, it comes out eventually, and you hear about it, and it's just like, it was just the timing of this was like, it was just like two extremes, like very
people
quickly.
Were finally happy for a few hours.
That is just gone, man. This is gone. But like, I think everybody's, like you said, win-win. I think it's set up. Everybody's going to get what they want out of this. And I think in the end, it's probably going to work out as a calculated risk. We'll see, though. But like, it's got to hit for the Saints season to end up where it should be. They made two smaller moves today. They brought back Ugo Amadi, Jonathan Abram on one-year deals. Uli Udo, the tackle. They got him, so a little bit of tackle depth there. You think any of them compete for spots?
Yeah, I mean, spots. There is a path.
Starting spots?
I don't think any of them are projected to be starters. I don't think the Saints, they have magnets on their boards with their depth charts somewhere in someone's office, and I bet all three of these guys are on the second row of those magnets. But Abram started in week 17 last year against Tampa Bay because Jordan Howden was sick, and then Abram just balled out. He had the interception, the forced fumble, and then Abram got to start again in week 18. Like, that's competition for Jordan Howden. Jordan Howden's got to prove he earns it. They want Jordan Howden to win that job, but Abram's former first-round pick who started a lot of games, who's going to try to win that job. Maybe somebody else gets in that mix. Ugo Amadi, they now have some protection at nickelback if Marshawn Lattimore does get traded and Alante Taylor gets moved outside. Ugo Amadi will be competing for that nickelback job. And then Uli Udo is the most interesting because he's a guy that he was in Minnesota for 5 years, and his bio really reads like James Hurst to me. Like, he, early in his career, he wasn't really starting much, but then in his third year with Clint Kubiak and Rick Dennison there, he wins the starting right guard job and starts there the whole year. And then the next year, he starts some games at right tackle. And then last year, he started a game at left tackle. And when he was in there, you know, I think actually, funny enough, the most positive reports I read about him were like the three games that he filled in at right tackle for somebody and did an admirable job. So he's one of those guys who's probably projected to be a top backup all across the line. But that's how James Hurst came in here, and he's probably started more games than anybody. So they're taking a cheap chance on a guy they know that's at about that level.
I think they probably all got a chance to, I mean, make the team. I think if I was drawing up a 53 today, that they're all on the team. Yeah. I don't know if any of them are starters. I mean, depending on, you know, if Marshawn gets traded, I think Ugo is. But if in that case,
that's a nickel.
Until they bring somebody else in, Maddox might be somebody they add like later. You know, I wonder
if it was a Ugo or a Maddox, or I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think so. I mean, I think that's still in the cards, maybe down the road. But, you know, sometimes those vets like join after certain dates and stuff. So like that could be something. But yeah, I mean, you go out, keep shopping, see what it, like, he hasn't landed anywhere else. So we'll see how it is. But if Lattimore were to get traded, I think Ugo's probably penciled in as a starter right now, just given who's on the team. And I think Abram's probably competition too. I think I'd give the edge to Howden if I was drawing up my starting 22 today, but he's definitely someone that's in that mix. I think he's someone that you want to find a way to get on the field more than he did last year too. He brought some dynamic stuff. People say he's the hardest practicing player on the team, all that stuff.
He was studying the DA said that after the game, that he logged more hours on the iPad than almost anyone on the team, even when he was on the practice squad for the first half of the season.
So, I mean, I think he's someone that I like them having him around, even just as a culture guy. I think he's a good guy to have around. All right, moving on to our next topic, the money segment presented by Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. How aggressive do we still expect the Saints to be in free agency after the Young deal? Anyone else that costs $10 million or more per year? We kind of answered this already. And if so, where would you spend it if you were the Saints?
Yeah, I think you said the right answer. I think the deals should look like Willie Gay Jr. and Chase Young. Anyone else? And frankly, at this time, I had a hard time finding anyone who would cost that much. There were a couple guys. I mean, we even wondered what Andres Pete's market would look like if he'd get anywhere near that money. I think it's pretty obvious now he's not going to get anywhere near that much money. Tyler Boyd was a name I thought would cost that much. He's still out there. I don't think they're going to be in the market for Odell Beckham. So, I mean, maybe you end up getting a one-year $6 million deal for someone like Tyler Boyd or Hunter Renfrow because they just don't have a market. Dalton Risner, another offensive lineman who played for Clint Kubiak, who who had, you know, real like first round, second round upside early in his career. I could see that Tyre Tart, a nose tackle who might come to you. I mean, anybody who is now still out there in free agency, I could see, but there's no way I don't think any of them are any. I don't see anyone who's a double digit guy except for at one position, which kind of bodes well for a Marshawn or bodes poorly for a Marshawn Lattimore trade. These guys are still out there at corner. Stephon Gilmore, Xavien Howard, Tre'Davious White, Adoree' Jackson, Steven Nelson, Christian Fulton, Akilah Witherspoon, Patrick Peterson. That's like the one market where there's still some big names. Safety too, with Justin Simmons, Jamal Adams out there. Like, I wonder if that hurts the trade market for Marshawn Lattimore.
It might. I mean, like, I think Marshawn cooks all them guys, but I mean,
But if you're looking at the need, like, I'm wondering why all those guys are sitting.
If you're looking
right
at the whole package of like money plus pick and all that stuff, like, yeah, I mean, I think you could talk yourself into like, well, just do the 1 year patch here and hope for the best and save the assets and or these two assets better than the one asset. But yeah, I think you're right. I think that makes it a little bit tougher on him. Yeah, I mean, I still think that situation, if he comes back, he's welcome with open arms. Like, yeah. I think the ball is entirely kind of in his court right now. Just kind of like, you know, if you want to mend this, it's mendable. Like, I think that carpet's been rolled out. You just got to walk down it. I'm with you, though. All the people you said, positions you said, I think if I were spending it, it's just at the obvious positions of need. Like, if a left tackle worth $10 million fell out of the sky, I would pay him. I don't know if that person
exists. There's one young guy, Josh Jones, was a backup with the Texans. He's young. He's shown potential. Maybe we'd talk ourselves into getting excited about him. But on the flip side, would you not get excited about David Bakhtiari, an older guy dealing with even more injury questions? That's not the road, I think.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So, yeah, I just don't think it's – I wouldn't spend it. I mean, that's my answer. And if where, like, I just probably wouldn't. Like, I just don't – I don't know. I kind of like what they're – doing. And if you told me Chase Young didn't have this, if there was no injury stuff, like, I would be on here being like, man, are they like low-key having a good offseason?
Yeah,
like, it makes sense, it fits, it's not too much in, it's the right amount in. Like, until that news came out, it felt like, man, they're kind of winning this a little bit on their own terms, like, not winning it over anyone else, like, kind of just they're managing the situation probably, and they're serving both things. Like, there's a path to being good and there's a path to the cap, and like, they were walking that tightrope. And they still kind of are, but it's just not in the sense of like, I'm not celebrating their offseason at this point because Chase Young is injured and that changes the complexion dramatically. We're going to keep going right after this short break from our sponsors. Make sure you support these people that support us, and we will be right back after this short commercial break.
Are you tired of renting and ready to own your dream home? Contact Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, your trusted source for home loans. Our competitive rates and flexible terms can help make your home ownership dreams a reality. If you're a first-time home buyer or looking to refinance, our experienced lenders are here to help. Our online application process allows you to apply on your schedule. It's quick, easy, and convenient. Visit us online at jeffersonfinancial.org to learn more. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Martin Wine and Spirits is home to a selection of hand-picked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and much, much more. They are family owned and operated since 1946 and specialize in wine, spirits, gourmet food, gift baskets, catering, and tasting events. They have many locations, so they're never too far away. You can check them out in Metairie, New Orleans, Mandeville, and Baton Rouge, or if it's more convenient, you can always shop online. Whether you're a wine novice or a seasoned collector, you'll enjoy the Martin Wine and Spirit experience. If you are not subscribed to New Orleans.football, make sure you do that today. NewOrleans.football/subscribe. Enter the code NOF. Save 20% on your first payment. All of our news, analysis, and extra podcasts. The walkthrough video feature. We got a story up right now detailing how Tyrann Mathieu and DeMario Davis spend their week during the season, hour by hour breakdown, and what leads them into their continued greatness. Coverage, hopefully you aren't going to find it anywhere else.
All awesome, right. Awesome story. Don't miss it.
I appreciate that, man. Yeah. All right. Now it's time for the Hard Hide Punch of Tool Strawberry Whiskey segment. This is a big, this is a mic one. I'm not a big baseball guy, but baseball season's coming up. And yeah, let's just kind of play around with it a little bit. If you were fielding,
we did Halloween costumes. I thought, like, yeah, let's have some fun.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. I like it. I know baseball. I just don't know current baseball.
All right, that's okay.
But yeah, if you were fielding a team, and we're just going to do the top four of the lineup, who would be your top four hitters and who would be your pitcher? I will go first on this one. I'm gonna go with Shahid as my leadoff guy. You got to get some speed up there. He can, you know, just slap hit his way to first base, like Ichiro Suzuki turn a single into a double. Like, he can leg out singles.
I'm picturing Willie Mays Hayes from Major League. Like, every time he's on first base, he's going for second.
I feel like there's maybe a little bit of Ricky Henderson there, too. All right. You know, he's from that area of the country. Like, he's my guy there. My number two hitter, I mean, I just feel like Taysom Hill's probably, like, Mickey Mantle. Like, he would just walk out there and be great at it and probably just hit the hell out of the ball. Probably 450-foot bombs. Like, there's a little bit of, like, just naturalism to him. Like,
Taysom's not on my team, and I'm immediately regretting it.
Yeah, I see it on your face. Like, he kind of
I screwed up on that.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of, like, it just feels like he could show up and be awesome, like Josh Hamilton without the issues. Like, it just feels like he'd kind of be that kind of guy, an MVP candidate right away. I mean, my number three guy, I just feel like DeMario would just violently hit the hell out of the ball. Like, so
I don't think he'd be disciplined enough. I think he'd be swinging too hard.
No, he's disciplined on the field, man. He's not a freelancer. He's disciplined. He sees things well. He flows. Like, there's just something about the way he plays the game, and he's under control. I feel like he would be in control to play.
We have heard he's pretty dominant on the basketball court, too, and that he just kind of mows guys over.
Oh, that man's probably a tremendous athlete. Yeah. And then, you know, I just kind of, for my cleanup hitter, I went with, like, what seemed like the strongest guy on the team.
Sure.
So I don't know. Like, I'm going to throw Ramchek in there on body. He looks like a cleanup hitter. So he's my number four. And then we're also going with a pitcher here. And I got to go with, you know, the guy that throws the ball.
Yeah, sure.
Derek Carr.
Yeah. Sure.
I feel like you probably walk up there and, you know, throw 90. Like, he just feels like, you know, if you want someone to throw, I'm going to go with the guy that throws the ball.
I did some research into this. Not a lot of, like, youth baseball, but he did not follow baseball that deep into his career. I mean, is Breeze still eligible for this list? He'd probably throw left-handed.
No.
Junk baller like Jamie Moyer or something like that until he's 50. All right, let's get mine up here. All right, my first one is my pick that has no research or basis behind it, but I just want Alvin on my team. I want him in my clubhouse. I think he's going to find a way to get on base. I thought, of course, about Rashid Shaheed and Chris Olave. My research told me that Chris Olave played baseball till he was 12. I don't know if that's enough.
Okay, all right.
I don't know if that's enough, but
yeah.
I don't know if Alvin's ever picked up a baseball bat, but I trust him.
Okay.
He's going to give me the effort.
I'll give you that.
Tyron, on the other hand, I mean, Tyron was my first pick. This team was going to have Tyron on it no matter what.
Center field?
Yes, as a matter of fact. Listen to this story. He can play shortstop for me. I know this guy's going to, and speaking of a guy who shows up on the bat, he talked to us when he was on the show about how he has to run everyone off the floor on the basketball court. He's just a guy who is going to make sure no one outdoes him. And I found this from a old story about his youth when he was killing it as the king of Willie Hall Park in the 7th Ward. His older brother told a story about how he chased down a runner from the outfield during a Little League game. Said the guy was trying to tag up from third to home. Tyron just ran him down from center field and tagged him out at home plate. That guy's on my team.
Have you, are you on Instagram?
I'm not really.
Well, he always posts clips of his son, Tyron Jr. Like,
he's a baseball player.
He hits the hell out of the ball.
He can be on my team, too.
There was a great one. He hit a moonshot, and, like, he just, like, chucked the bat. Like, so Tyron's teaching. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean,
Tyron's my number one pick.
There's some baseball in the family. Yeah, his son just, he just murders the ball, man. It is impressive.
This was huge for me. My number three hitter, Jonathan Abram. We originally came up with this concept, and it got tossed aside on Monday because of the Peyton Turner news. And Jonathan Abram was not eligible, but he has signed now, and he immediately signed a two-way contract to play football and baseball for me. Listen to the high school-esque exploits of Jonathan Abram. He was a three-time varsity player, could have taken that route, baseball, in high school, was still playing all the way through high school, but he was also the quarterback and safety of the football team, and as quarterback, he threw for 21 touchdowns and ran for 19. 40 touchdowns for this guy while playing baseball.
Okay.
Underrated athlete on this team.
All right.
And then Peyton Turner, I went the exact same with you at cleanup hitter. I was like thinking of a big guy. All right, who's my big guy? I found out that Jack Heflin played baseball, but I have a feeling Jack Heflin was not that big. Defensive tackle from Iowa. He probably can't even get his arms around the bat anymore. He is bulked up to defensive tackle size. Turner, on the other hand, is still athletic build, could still play baseball. And baseball, he said, was his best sport growing up. He was a first baseman and a pitcher, and he thinks he could have been even better at baseball, but it was too boring for him, so he took football.
All right.
And then Hayner, I also picked Derek Carr, and then I saw you pick Derek Carr, so I just went with the younger arm because I had no, you know, okay. I had no creativity there either. But I have a feeling Hayner probably would be a good pitcher. Like, you know, he's one of those, like, disciplined, like, he'd probably have, like, seven pitches in his arsenal that he would teach himself on YouTube videos. Peterman's got to go with Derek Carr. I think they're partners.
Is he like the pitching coach? He's my team's pitching coach, I guess. All right. Well, we got a poll running on YouTube right now and asking whose team would win. And I hate to tell you, you're losing. You're losing right now. You're losing right now. So,
Here's why I was losing. Because you just picked all the star players on the team. I did the research. You know, I found out about Jonathan Abram, Peyton Turner's background, you know. Well, maybe after they listen to the explanation, they'll start voting for my team.
You haven't moved the needle yet. Still holding steady at 55. Make sure you get in there and vote.
All right. That's the Nick Colt.
Moving on to the Martin's question of the day. Martin's is home to a wide selection of handpicked barrel select bourbon whiskeys and more. Martin's so much more than just wine. Location, uptown location in Metairie. Me and Brandon just ate lunch there today. It was excellent. Make sure you go and get a sandwich. You will not be disappointed. Taysom Hill will be 34 when the season starts. When do the Saints have to start being concerned with his age, considering he is more of a running back slash tight end than a quarterback? Players typically start declining in their late 20s, early 30s at those positions.
I have no idea what the answer to this question is, because Taysom Hill is such a unicorn. He started his NFL career at age 30, I think. He had all those injuries in college. He's been mostly healthy in his career. And he gets to our woe every single year. He only gets like 100 touches a year anyway. So he's not getting the wear and tear on his body. Could he play till he's 40 if he's only going to get, you know, single digit touches every game? We did actually see a slight decline in his rushing average after he averaged 5.3, 5.8, 5.3, 5.3, and then a career high 6.0 yards per carry in 2022. He plummeted to a career low 5.0 yards per carry last year. 5.0 yards per carry, the worst of his career as a 33-year-old last year. And a guy who has averaged more than 5 yards a carry every year of his career needs to touch the ball more. But, obviously there could be decline at some point. It's fair to ask. It's fair to wonder. And we've talked about $10 million a year. I don't know how much longer the Saints are going to keep paying that. But I'm very fascinated to see what this new offensive minds have in store for him. And we'll have a lot better feel after we see what they do with him if we think they're going to keep this up beyond this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just said it. Like, the lack of touches kind of changes the aging process. You know, the other thing is he came in the league, he was 27. You know, he was a little bit older coming in the league. So he didn't have the college hits. He didn't have as many pro hits. So, I mean, I think he's going to age. Like, I think he's at an aging point naturally where you kind of got to start looking at it a little bit. And when you lose a little bit on the tread on the wheels, like, I think, you know, that affects you a little bit too. So, yeah, it's definitely something that you won the thing 51%. I should have stopped talking.
Close it.
I should have ran it like a politician, man. Stop the steal. Like just make sure we got out of here before you could win that. But you won it.
I stuffed the ballot box.
Yeah, but look, I think Taysom's overall aging process isn't going to be the same as a running back. It's not going to be the same as it, because he just doesn't touch the ball as much. But yeah, I think like anyone, he's a hit away from, you know, that change in his effectiveness. He wakes up one day and he's a little bit older. That changes his effectiveness. But if we were talking about him aging like a running back, like, we're already past that point, like, of concern. You're 4 years past it at this point. He's going to be 34. So, yeah, it's interesting. But, I have no idea. I have no idea how to answer it either.
I got to it at the end of my question. I do think this is a big year for him. I mean, I think he's almost like he's on a one-year deal. He needs to prove that he is an important part of this offense. Otherwise, they're not paying him another $10 million next year when he's a year older, unless we really get excited. But I'm going to bring up my follow-up question off script here, because this was very popular. It was asked in a lot of the Martin's questions the other day, and I didn't pick it, but I thought we might end up talking about it at some point. The Justin Fields trade, he goes for a sixth-rounder, which just stuns me, because I get it that the league is not sold on him being a starting quarterback in the NFL. I get why the Saints didn't bring him in here to compete with Derek Carr. They've sold themselves on Derek Carr. But just from being the guys who cover Taysom Hill and seeing how effective his role that he's in as a runner, Justin Fields costs $6 million. Taysom Hill costs $10 million. Taysom Hill is going to turn 34 years old. Justin Fields is 25 years old. Like, would you take Justin Fields in the Taysom Hill role right now? And are you shocked that nobody wants to try that out in the NFL?
I wouldn't, because I think some of the stuff that Taysom has to do is at least be a believable blocker, at least be a believable threat at tight end, and I don't think Fields gives you that. Like, if he comes out, you know exactly what they're doing, and I think there's an element of knowing exactly what Taysom's doing, but when you start to act like you know what Taysom's doing, he's going to do something else to put you in a position of of inferiority on defense, and you can create a mismatch. I don't know that. And look, I have no idea. Maybe Justin Fields would be an incredible blocker, but I don't know that. So I can't project that on a quarterback, because I think Taysom's unique. I think he's a unicorn. Yes. So
no, I agree.
I think his ability to do some of that stuff is what makes him a thing, and it's a reason that there aren't 32 of them in the NFL. Right. I think there's a reason why there's one. We've seen other teams try to do it. Denver tried to do it. You know, we've seen other teams roll it out there. The 49ers tried to do some stuff with Trey Lance, and they're the most creative team in the league, and they couldn't extrapolate it into like a major package because it was just too glaring of like, this is what we're going to do. And sometimes it's okay to line up and say, this is what we're going to do and go do it. But I think for that to be effective multiple times a game, like, there has to be at least an element of deception, and you can take advantage of that if they try to cheat.
Well, no, look, and I'm thinking of it just in terms of the QB power and the read option plays alone, which sometimes are only three a game. When they're not able to establish a run game, Taysom Hill obviously makes the money he makes because they have found value for him beyond that with the tight end role, sometimes receiver role, sometimes fullback role, sometimes special teams role. But man, even if it's just the place where he lines up at quarterback, I think it's immensely valuable. I feel like the Saints have underutilized it. I feel like the league kind of misses the boat on that a little bit, but.
My other thing on that, though, is like, if I'm Justin Fields, I'm not accepting
that. He doesn't want that. I know. I understand that.
Yeah.
But I would like my backup quarterback to be able to give me, like, as a bonus, you're a backup developmental quarterback. Maybe you'll compete all summer long with Russell Wilson or whoever, wherever else he might have wound up. But if you are my number two quarterback, I'm at least going to put five plays in the playbook for you to utilize what an asset you are. I was very surprised at how the league viewed him, but I've always been very surprised at how the league and analysts everywhere seem to undervalue Taysom Hill too. So
yeah, the Pittsburgh thing. I was watching ESPN the other day, and like, they spent like an hour straight just on the Pittsburgh quarterback controversy. Like, that is going to be a fascinating situation. It's going to be loud. Like, Tomlin's got he's got a job to do to make sure that doesn't become a distraction. I know they're out there saying Russell Wilson's the starter and all that, but like, I don't buy it yet. Like,
it is. We've talked about this for years and years. Teams will sign, like, obviously everyone's disappointed in the Saints are going to have the competition between Haener and Peterman, but Easton Stick re-signed as the backup for the Chargers, and it just kind of is quiet, and there's over the years, there's been lots of talk about, why not bring in this more famous backup? Ryan Tannehill still out there without a job. And there is something too, like, the element of people wanting to call for the backup is something teams are very leery about doing.
They are. But look, if I was a fan of a team and I don't have the surefire answer at quarterback, I would love what the Steelers are doing right now. Because, like,
they got them so cheap, the two of them.
And they might bust on both, but, like, at least there's a possibility. And you're just kind of bringing it in, and it's like, we're going to throw everything at this. And, okay, if it works, then, great. If it doesn't, cost a six-round pick and $1.2 million. Yeah. Like, there's really no downside to their situation. And if you have a bad quarterback situation, and I don't think they have a good quarterback situation, not yet, until somebody answers it, but like, that is the best of a bad situation, I think. And you can at least be excited about it. But it is going to be loud, and it is going to be distracting, and there are going to be hurt feelings. And we saw that happen I think the way the Taysom and Jameis thing shook out. There were a lot of people that watched that and thought, like, Jameis shouldn't have been put through that or anything like that. So there's downsides to it all the time, but, if you're a fan of a team, like, that's you want to look
at it.
Many
cracks at it.
You want to, because even if it doesn't work out right now, March 20th, it's like, well, Russell could do all this, and man, Justin Fields, like, if he figures this out and they build it right and all that, like, there's a lot of things that you can convince yourself into liking about that, even if it doesn't work. But at least there's a possibility. So I like what they're doing. I like how it costs nothing, like, nothing at all. So
nothing.
Yeah. All right, that's gonna do it for us today. Appreciate you guys tuning in. We will be back on Friday, coming to you from PJ's. Owners meetings are this weekend, so make sure you're locked into NewOrleans.football. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the website, get all the coverage, never miss a thing, be well informed, hopefully. That's what we try to do, and appreciate you guys watching.